Good morning. Welcome to the Kollel Yom Rishon Thanksgiving edition. It's our delight, the Kingsway Jewish Center, to be able to host this event this morning, sponsored by YU and many shuls in the neighborhood, and coordinated by the center. By the Center for the Jewish Future. It's my pleasure to call upon the Assistant Rabbi of Kingsway Jewish Center, who is also who also works with the YU's CJF, to introduce this morning's program.
Thank you, Rabbi Toker, and thank you to Kingsway for hosting the event. My name is Mordechai Schiffman, and while it's true that my connection to this program is through Kingsway and through Yeshiva University, my main connection to this event is that I was born and raised in Brooklyn. And while I was not cognizant of this when we chose the speakers, it turns out that both of our speakers also have their roots in Brooklyn, and Rabbi Schachter and Dr. Pelkovitz were actually chavrusas in Torah Vadas together. We read in this week's parsha that Leah named her fourth son Yehuda, saying, "Hapam odes Hashem, this time I will thank Hashem." The root of the name Yehuda is thanks, hodah, making an appropriate week for this week's parsha to fall out on Thanksgiving week. The question then becomes, why did Leah wait till her fourth son to thank Hashem? Shouldn't she have thanked Hashem even for her first son, her second son, and her third son? Rabbi Aaron Yeshayah Rotter, who wrote the Sefer Shari Aaron, explains based on Rashi's comments that of course Leah was thankful for every child that she had. However, hodah, he argues, is a specific type of gratitude, which is used when one receives something that's unexpected. Leah, Rashi says, saw in a prophecy that there will be 12 tribes, and that being that there Yaakov had four wives, each wife would have three children. That's what she assumed. Now that she had her fourth child, she called him Yehuda, from the word hodah, which means gratitude for something unexpected for her unexpected fourth child. On that note, I would like to extend hodah, gratitude, for the unexpected, to all the shuls who participated, and everyone who came in the audience today. Well, the goal when I started putting the program together was to have four or five shuls co-sponsor the event. Knowing that these are tough economic times, I did not expect a positive response from most of the rabbis or the shuls that I contacted, but unexpectedly, most of the shuls were enthusiastic and agreed to participate in this morning of Talmud Torah, which unites the Brooklyn community. And in the end, we have 14 shuls from all over Brooklyn who participated today. So this morning, we extend our hodah, our unexpected gratitude, to the following shuls mentioned in alphabetical order and their rabbis. The Avenue N Jewish Center, Rabbi Max Schreier. Congregation Beth Torah, Rabbi Arya Zankat. Congregation B'nai Yitzchak, Rabbi Joseph Beda. Congregation Oab Tzedek of Bell Harbor, Rabbi Tzvi Selengut. Congregation Pri Eitz Chaim, Ocean Avenue Jewish Center, Rabbi Melvin Berg. Congregation Prospect Park Yeshiva, Rabbi Abraham Kelman. Kingsway Jewish Center, Rabbi Eitan Tokayer. Merkaz Yisrael Marine Park, Rabbi Elisha Weiss. Yad Dominion of Flatbush, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Sokol. Young Israel of Avenue J, Rabbi Baruch Dov Braun. Young Israel of Avenue K, Rabbi Aryeh Ralbag. Young Israel of Bedford Bay, Rabbi Tzvi Fried. Young Israel of Flatbush, Rabbi Kenneth Alman. Young Israel of Midwood, Rabbi Eli Baruch Shulman. Our first speaker this morning is Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter. Rabbi Schachter is a university professor of Jewish history and Jewish thought and senior scholar at the Center for Jewish Future at Yeshiva University. He previously served as the dean of the Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik Institute in Boston, and before that as the rabbi of the Jewish Center in Manhattan for 19 years. He is a prolific author and one of the most sought-after speakers in the Jewish community. On a personal note, I had the privilege of taking an elective course with Rabbi Schachter entitled Teaching Jewish History. Well, at first I wasn't sure if I wanted to take the class because I heard he actually makes his students do work. I am very grateful that I did. The true mark of a great teacher is the regret one has that he did not capitalize on the opportunity to take more classes with that teacher, and I wish, I have a regret, that I could have taken more classes with Rabbi Schachter. Besides for benefiting both intellectually and emotionally from the engaging and thoughtful material, I am even more grateful for being granted the opportunity to develop a relationship with Rabbi Schachter, in which he has been a truly inspirational and beloved mentor. It is my privilege to introduce Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter, who will be speaking to us today on the topic of the interaction of law and narrative, halacha and story, in the Torah, Mishnah, and Gemara. Rabbi Schachter.
want to thank Rabbi Schiffman very much for the really wonderful introduction. I teach at Yeshiva University, and my beloved colleague, Dr. Pelkovitz, teaches at Yeshiva University, and really is a tremendous bracha for me, and I know for him as well, to have such extraordinary talmidim. This is an outstanding educational institution, and we're here today representing Yeshiva University, and the wonderful students that we have speak for themselves. Bershus Mara D'Asra, Rabbi Tokayer, thank you very much for hosting us today, and happy birthday to your daughter. Should have a lot of nachas and a lot of simcha from all the members of your family. I want to thank Rabbi Schiffman for putting together today's program. I want to thank Nechama Cohen from the Center for the Jewish Future at YU for working very hard to put together today's program. And I do want to acknowledge the presence of my beloved former chavrusa and a wonderful friend. It's always a pleasure to share the podium with you. The subject for our discussion today is the interaction between law and narrative, halacha and story in the Torah, Mishnah, and the Gemara. Now, I came across this issue again recently when there were two books that were published that focused on it and brought me back to this whole entire conversation. Does anybody not have a copy of the sheet? If you don't have a copy, please raise your hand, and we want to make sure that you do, because we're going to be learning together. Just keep your hand up, please, if you don't mind. Rav Mordechai will be mezaki you with copies. In 2011, Oxford University Press published a book by Barry Scott Wimfheimer on Narrating the Law, A Poetics of Talmudic Legal Studies, which talks about the role of stories in the Gemara. We'll come back to that. Just this year in 2012, Moshe Simon Shoshan, Stories of the Law, Narrative Discourse and Construction of Authority in the Mishnah. That one is Oxford University Press, Wimfheimer is University of Pennsylvania Press, and both of them deal with the issue of what are stories doing in the Mishnah and what are stories doing in the Gemara. And I went back and started to think about the place of stories in the Torah. So what do you make of the fact, and I invite you to think about this and continue to think about it, Dafka, because we're now still holding in Parshas Sefer Bereishis, the beginning of the Torah. What do you make of the fact that the Torah itself is really a combination of both halacha and stories? What do you make of the fact that the Torah, which is a code book, the Torah which presents Tariag Mitzvos, is embedded, the mitzvos, the law, what we call nomos, nomos means law, that the law is embedded in narrative and story. That the Torah is not just a storybook, even though we get the impression from Sefer Bereishis that that's what we're being taught, stories. It's not just a storybook. It's not just a law code. It's a combination. And the law, the halachos, the mitzvos of the Torah, the deoraisis of the Torah, are embedded within stories. So you have a story, an arangavor from, you have a mitzvah, then you have a story, and you have a mitzvah, and then you have a group of mitzvahs, and then you have a story. What do we make of the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam chose to introduce both of these in the same document? To introduce the narrative of our people, to introduce, beginning with Briyas HaOlam, and in the same document, to teach us our code, how we should behave. You'll go back to the very first Rashi in Chumash. The very first Rashi in Chumash already is sensitive to this duality. Rashi says, why does the Torah begin with Bereishis? Lo hoya tzorech lahaschil la-Torah ela me'achodesh hazeh lochem, she'i mitzvah rishona she'nitztavu ba-Yisrael. Rashi's assumption by asking that question is, it's a mitzvah book. And if it's a mitzvah book, that's where it should have started. Why is the Torah starting with stories? And Rashi answers, whatever it is that Rashi answers, that it's important for the world to know that the Rabbanu Shel Olam created the world, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam gave Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people. So therefore, we begin with stories, but it still leaves open the question of the relationship between particular stories and particular mitzvahs. Once we get to Achodesh Hazeh Lochem, the Torah continues with stories, but repeatedly inserts mitzvahs. So I want to begin by addressing this in the Torah from three different perspectives. I want to take a look at three different sections of the Torah and to try to understand why is this particular mitzvah in this particular place in the Torah. So speaking of Achodesh Hazeh Lochem, the bottom of the first page. Once again, I hope you all have the Xerox sheets because we're going to be learning together. The Torah at the end of Perek Yud Aleph in Sefer Shmos brings us up to Yetzias Mitzrayim. It brings us up to Makas Bachoras. This is it. Kadosh Baruch Hu heard the cries of the Jewish people. Kadosh Baruch Hu sends Moshe Rabbeinu, and he works out. Now we're coming to the end of the 10 plagues, and now we're ready to go. We're now Makas Bachoros. And why is it that at the beginning of Perek Yud Beis, on page 1, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe Vayalar Beretz Mitzrayim Lemor, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim, Rishon Hu Lochem Lachodshei Ashan. And then what follows in Pasuk Gimel, Dabro Kol Adas Yisrael Lemor, Be'asor LaChodesh Hazeh V'yikud Lochem, that makes sense. Now that it's time to go, now that it's time to leave, it's time to prepare what will be the Korban Pesach. So therefore, that I understand. So I understand that we're ready to leave. I understand that we need to prepare a Korban before we're going to leave. Why is it that this pasuk, the mitzvah of Achodesh Hazeh Lochem, of Kiddush Achodesh, is introduced right here as the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim is about to unfold? Why is this pasuk in this particular case? Take out the pasuk, everything follows. The narrative continues. The story makes sense. Arayin Gevorfim, Achodesh Hazeh Lochem. Why? Why is it here? Second issue I want to raise is the question of challah. The end of Parsha Shlach on page 2, the end of Parsha Shlach and Bamidbar Tezvav, the Torah here has just finished telling us about Meraglim. The Torah has told us that Bnei Yisrael were going to go directly into Eretz Yisrael, and then they were denied that in punishment for their lack of faith after the Meraglim came back with their report. And we're now moving ahead in Parsha Shlach. Arayin Gevorfim in Parsha Shlach, towards the end, right before at the bottom of the page, at the end, the story of the Mekoshesh, right before, right here, we see in Pasuk Yud Zayin, in Perek Tezvav, Vayedab Hashem al Moshe Lemor, Dabar al Bnei Yisrael v'yamarta alayhem, Bevoachem al Oretz asher ani mevim eschem shama, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, V'hoya ba'al cholchem milechem ha'oretz, tarimu truma la'ashem, you have to set aside a portion from what it is that you're about to eat. Rashis Ariso Sechem Chala Tarimu Truma Ketruma Sagor. Very nice. It's a beautiful mitzvah, the mitzvah of Chala. Vasepis, the mitzvah of Chala of all places in the Torah. Why is it right here after the story of the Meraglim? And the third question is the Parsha of Paraduma, the beginning of Parshas Chukas. The beginning of Parshas Chukas, till now, in the last few prakim, we have the story of the Meraglim. We have the promise or the sad news that Bnei Yisrael got that they're not going to go directly into Eretz Yisrael. The next Perek Chaf in Sefer Bamidbar is about the 40th year. So Mahalchein, we're getting ready, we're moving closer. And Emitin Derinin is the mitzvah of Paraduma. Why is the mitzvah of Paraduma Dafki here at the beginning of Parshas Chukas? Maybe it should have been earlier. Maybe it should have been in the parsha that we began when Bnei Yisrael is getting ready for the Korban Pesach. So they have to know what to do in case they're Tameim. Why is it that the mitzvah of Paraduma is here? And I just chose three examples, and there are many such examples. And I actually would invite you, as the Kriyas HaTorah unfolds after Bereishis, when we get into a whole series of mitzvahs, beginning Taka with HaChadosh Hazeh Lochem, we have Taryag mitzvos, to ask yourself every once in a while, why is it that this particular mitzvah is particularly here? I live in Teaneck, New Jersey, and I'm a member of a shul with a wonderful rabbi. My rabbi is Rabbi Yosef Adler. We daven in Rinat Yisrael. And Rabbi Adler once gave a talk asking and addressing these three examples. So I want to begin with these three examples and express Hakaras HaTov to my rabbi for helping me understand this, and then go from there to Mishnah and Gemara. So the first question is, why HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim? Why is Kiddush HaChodesh right after Makas Bechoros, right before the preparations for the Korban Pesach? So if you turn to page 3, you will see that Rav Soloveitchik, in an article that he published in 1966 in Gesher, no longer alive, was a publication of Yeshiva University, published an article called Sacred and Profane, Kodesh and Chol in World Perspective. And he deals in this article with the notion of the sanctity of space and the notion of the sanctity of time. The notion of the sanctity of space, so we're now in a Mikdash Ma'at, there's a Kedusha to a Beis HaKnesses, there's a Kedusha to a Beis HaMikdash, not every space, not every place in this world is equal, and there's also such a thing as Kedusha Sazman, not only Kedusha Samakom. So time is also sanctified. So we understand Shabbos, we understand Yom Tov, that the time of Shabbos and Yom Tov is qualitatively different. It's inhered with a level of Kedusha that your average Tuesday doesn't have. So in the context of talking about the sanctity of time, he talks about the notion of Sfiras HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer bridging between Yetzias Mitzrayim of Pesach and Kabbalah Satorah of Shavuos. Left-hand side of page 3. The basic criterion which distinguishes free man from slave is the kind of relationship each has with time and its experience. Freedom is identical with a rich, colorful, creative time consciousness. Bondage is identical with passive intuition and reception of an empty, formal time stream. When the Jews were delivered from the Egyptian oppression and Moshe rose to undertake the almost impossible task of metamorphosing a tribe of slaves into a nation of priests, he was told by God that the path leading from the holiday of Pesach to Shavuos, from the initial liberation to consummate freedom, Gilui Shechina, revelation, Matan Torah, Shavuos, leads through the medium of time. That the way you can somehow extricate yourself from the Tachlis HaShibud to the Cheirus, from the ultimate Shibud Mitzrayim to the ultimate Cheirus of Kabbalah HaTorah, is through understanding and appreciating the medium of time. The commandment of Sfira was entrusted to Jew. The wondrous test of counting 49 successive days was put to him. These 49 days must be whole. If one day is missed, the act of numeration is invalidated. A slave who is capable of appreciating every day, a slave who is capable of grasping the significance of the time, the chashivus of time, the meaning and worth of time, of weaving every thread of time into a glorious fabric, quantitatively stretching over a period, in this case, of sphere of 7 weeks, but qualitatively forming the warp and woof of centuries of change, such a slave is eligible for Torah. What makes a slave? A slave, by definition, is time is irrelevant to me. It's not my time. I'm totally meshubed to the owner. Whatever the owner tells me to do, I do. I don't own my time. I don't determine the way I spend my time. How do you extricate yourself from the mentality of being a slave to appreciate what freedom is? You understand, you learn the chashivas of time. So now time is important. Now time is significant. 7 weeks, every day, it's a different day. The time of sphere is the transition between the avdus and the chayut. So what the Rav said with regard to sphere, I want to apply to answer our question. That maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu dafka, as they're now about to leave Mitzrayim, says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim. You are Mekadesh L'Chodesh. You have bailus over time. You have shlita over time. You have authority over time. You and time are a meaningful unit together. Until now you were slaves. But now in the transition, as you're about to leave slavery and enter into first leaving Mitzrayim through the Midbar and going into Eretz Yisrael via Kabbalah Satorah at Har Sinai, now you appreciate time, and therefore the notion of you have authority over time, you are Mekadesh, HaChedesh HaZeh Lochem, Rosh Chodeshim becomes significant. Second question about challah. Why is the halacha, the mitzvah of challah, dafka at the end of Parshas Shlach? So I went looking in Meforshim and I found that the one Meforish that I found that Bichlal addresses this kind of a question, namely, why is this mitzvah in this particular place, is the Sforno. If you look through the Sforno's commentary on the Torah, you'll find that often he will raise this question. And it's not just in the context of challah, where I Xerox this Sforno for you at the top right of page 3, but bichlal. So if this is an issue that interests you, just go visit the Sforno, and more often than not, he'll have an interpretation. So the Sforno Shteltzuch on this question. In Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Chav, top right, page 3, Chalo Tarimu Truma, Achar Chet HaMeraglim, Hitzrich Gama Chalo, L'mayan Yihu Yu Ru'uyim Shetochol Brocha Bivaseyem. That after the Chet of the Meraglim, so B'nai Yisrael is in a low point, they're in a low point, this is a terrible thing that happened to them. Where was their Amunah, where was their faith, where was their Bitochon? They didn't believe. They believed the Meraglim better than believing the Rabbanu Shel Olam. So in order to somehow help extricate them from the low situation in which they placed themselves, therefore to be roi for bracha, the Torah gives the mitzvah of chal. Rabbi Avler suggested something else. And maybe the reason why chal is right here after the story of the Meraglim is because, after all, they were looking forward to going into Eretz Yisrael. They fully expected to go into Eretz Yisrael. And now, suddenly, Hashem says, you're not going. And imagine the upset, and imagine the depression. So therefore, the Torah gives them and us, at this point, the mitzvah of challah, because the Torah begins the mitzvah of challah by saying, when you go into Eretz Yisrael, the parsha of challah begins, Dabar al b'nei Yisrael v'yomart aleim b'vo'achem al ha'aretz. And in fact, challah is a dairaisa only in Eretz Yisrael. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling them is, don't give up hope. Don't despair. For the time being, you don't deserve to go. And you're not going to go. But you will go. You will go. And now, right now, dafka, in the throes of the upset over their not going now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them a mitzvah. You should know you're going to go. And when you go, you're going to be mekayem a mitzvah of challah. The goal of this mitzvah now here is to be an antidote to the upset that they're feeling because they're not now going into Eretz Yisrael. And that's how I want to also explain the issue of Parah Aduma. And I want to bring it a little bit to halacha lemaisa, to clearly what is on everybody's mind today, and namely what's going on in Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael. And that is that, again, where is Parah Aduma? Parah Aduma is the beginning of Parshas Chukas. It's after the story of the Meraglim. It's after Bamidbar Nasa Ba'aloyscha Shlach Korach Chukas. It's after the story of Korach. So there is a mashbear here. And there is an upset here. And there is a disappointment here. And all communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael is now going to go on a break. The next parsha is the 40th year. For 39 years, there's Hester Punim. For 39 years, there's no connection, there's no communication. And B'nai Yisrael are struggling to try to understand, how is it possible for me to be able to continue to maintain a relationship to God when I don't feel palpably the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam in my life? Until now, I had all of the incredible Isaisim, Maifsim, unbelievable. I saw the Rabbanu Shalom. Everywhere I saw the Rabbanu Shalom. I experienced, I felt, I sensed, I internalized, I saw, I heard. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was obvious in my life, and now God takes a break for a long time. How can I continue to maintain a connection to a God that has become absent in my life, so different than the way he had been until now? So the Torah tells us, Kindalach, Zos Chukas HaTov. There's such a thing as a chok. There's such a thing as absolute pure faith, even in the absence, and maybe precisely in the absence of any demonstrable presence of God. The mitzvah of paradum is the paragmatic example. It's metayer tameim, it's metame tahirim, we have no idea. Amarti echkima v'hirachayka mimenu, we don't understand. And at the end of the day, it's a mitzvah like every other mitzvah, and we accept the mitzvah like every other mitzvah, and we submit to this mitzvah like every other mitzvah, because we believe it's God's will. And at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us that when there is hester upon him, even when we don't feel the Rabbanu Shalom, even when we're not experiencing the caress and the hug and the warmth and the closeness and the connection of the Rabbanu Shalom, at the end of the day, we submit because we believe that this is the will of God. We don't feel that now. We're going through an extremely difficult time in Israel. Who knows what's going to happen with the news from yesterday? I have no idea. But at the end of the day, we believe that the Rabbanu Shel Olam will be supportive of us in Yirtzah Hashem with our tefillos. Kadosh Baruch Hu should grant all of us and all of Achenu B'nai Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael tremendous success and peace and freedom. And when we don't see Hashem, clearly it's important for us to know that Hashem is there. And maybe that's why Parah Aduma is after Meraglim, is after Baal Oscha, after Shlach, after Korach. At the end of the day, Kindalach, you need to know that it's not about feeling the presence of God, it's about believing in the presence of God. So these are just three examples. The example of Achedish Zelochem, the example of the mitzvah of Challah, the example of the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, where we, I think, appropriately and legitimately can ask, why is this mitzvah in this particular place? What is the nature of the relationship between the story of the Torah, between the history that the Torah is teaching us, and embedded within the various tariag mitzvos that keep on recurring in the course of the telling of this story? The Torah begins Bereishis Bara Elokim. It ends Leinei Kol Yisrael with the Misa of Moshe Rabbeinu. And in Mitten Derin, we have 613 mitzvahs. And what do we make bigadol, bichlal, of the fact that this is all in one book? What's the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us the halacha via the medium of the story? That is the general question. I'm familiar with a code book. A code book is a code book. This is what you do, this is what you don't do, this is how you do it, this is how you don't do it. But here it's embedded in the story, and that was Rashi's question. Why are you telling me stories? It's a code book. Rashi's assumption, point of departure is, but it's not like that. And it's not just to tell us the story of creation and to tell us the story that Eretz Yisrael is central to us and we deserve it and we own it, but it's to intertwine the story and the halacha. And the second point is, in particular cases, not just in general, what do we make of this, but in particular cases, and I hope you'll think about this as you hear Kriyas HaTorah and you learn the next couple of months, ask yourself, not just let me understand the story, let me understand the mitzvah, but let me understand the nature of the relationship between the two. I want to move on now to Mishnah. Stories in the Mishnah. So there are many stories in the Mishnah. What role do stories play in the Mishnah? Once again, I would have said that a Mishnah is a code. The Mishnah is Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Mishnah tells me what to do. So most of the time there's a machlokes. We have to know how to paskin. But the Mishnah presents the behavior. The Mishnah presents the acts, what we have to do, what we don't have to do, and all of its details. Zok the Mishnah Maseches Erevin. I want to give you just one brief example. And again, when you learn Mishnayos, we're going to get to the Gemara in a minute, but just when you learn Mishnayos, focus on this in the context of Mishnayos. Misha Yoshav B'derech, Erevin Memhei Amar Aleph, bottom right, page 3. Mi sheyoshav baderech va'amad v'ra'a harehu samach li'ir. Take a look at Rashi. Here's what's happening. What's happening here as follows. I'll give you a little bit of an introduction. When Shabbos comes, when Shabbos arrives, where I find myself on Shabbos, I make that my place. It's called being Konesh Visa. That is my place. Wherever I am, I'm allowed to go 2,000 amos all around. I'm not allowed to go more than 2,000 amos. That's called Tchum Shabbos. I'm allowed to walk within the 2,000 amos of the spot that I make my own at the onset of Shabbos. If I'm in a city, then the entire city is my Makom Shvisa, and I'm allowed to go 2,000 amos in any direction outside of the city. So even if the city is a large city, and it's 12,000 amos, and I'm at amah number 700, I can go all the way to the end of the city, and the 2,000 amos begins after the city. That's the second principle. Now, if when Shabbos arrives, I am within 2,000 amos of a city, if when Shabbos arrives, I am within 2,000 amos of a city, I can proactively designate my place of residence as being in the city. I could say that even though now I'm not in the city, I'm outside of the city, but if I'm within 2,000 amos of the city, I am going to make the city my place of residence. Therefore, A, I could walk anywhere in the city, and B, I could walk now within 2,000 amos outside from any direction of the city. The question is, the question that the Mishnah addresses, is what happens if you're within 2,000 amos of the city when Shabbos arrives, but you don't realize you're within 2,000 amos of the city, and therefore you did not proactively state clearly, I am going to make the city my place of residence. Had you known that you were within 2,000 amos of the city, you probably would have done so. It would have given you a little bit more room to vulgar around, to move around on Shabbos. But you didn't know. Lemaisa you were, but you didn't know, so you didn't say it. So now the question is, can I consider, now that I woke up Shabbos morning and I look out and I see, oh my God, at the door, there's the city, I'm amish within 2,000 amos of the city. Oh, you know, if I would have known, I would have made it my Makom Shvisa. Can I do so? Can we assume that I would have, that it is my Makom Shvisa? That because I'm within 2,000 amos and I would have made it, the only reason why I didn't make it is because I didn't know that I was within 2,000 amos. Would that be good enough? Zok the Mishnah Mishayosha Vederech Va'amad. If somebody sits down, Rashi, Mishayosha Vederech Lanuach, Shahoya Oyef. It's now late Friday afternoon, Shabbos is arriving. You've been on the road, you stop in a particular place, and you rest in that place. And you didn't know that you were very close to the city, within 2,000 amos. And it got dark, and now it's Shabbos. And when you get up in the morning, now you see how close you are. So the first opinion in the Mishnah is, Hoil v'loi Haisa kavanoso lekach lo yikones divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says, I'm very sorry. Had you known, you would have done it. But lemaisa, you didn't do it. You didn't know, but you didn't do it. You didn't do it. It's too late. You can't consider the city, the entire city, your makom shvis. Reb Yehuda amar yikones. Reb Yehuda says, no. Since had you known, you would have. So it's considered good enough. And therefore, even though you didn't articulate the fact that the city is your residence place, it still counts. You can go into the city, all the way through the whole city, and within 2,000 amos beyond the city. Am Rabbi Yehuda Maisa Hoya, V'nichnas Rabbi Tarfon below Mischavi. And Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll bring you a proof from my opinion. My opinion is that it can be considered that it is your place of residence, even though you did not explicitly designated as such. Maisa Hoya V'nichnas Rabbi Tarfon below Mischavi. This once happened with Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon, this whole story happened to Rabbi Tarfon, and then he went into the city below Mischavi, and he did not know that he was within 2,000 amos, and yet he was nichnas into the city. He made the city his makom shvisa. Is a raya from the story about Rabbi Tarfon to me that even if you don't know, and therefore don't designate, you could still do that. Tanya Zot de Gemara, Amar Reb Yehuda, Maisa Barabi Tarfon, Shehoya Mahalech Baderech, V'choshcholo, Velon chutz le'ir. Story about Reb Tarfon, that he was traveling, became dark. What do you do when it comes dark? You stop, you can't see anything. And he rests outside of the city. The shachris in the morning, mitza'uhu roe bokor. People, the shepherds in the area found him. They were wandering around. Amru lo rebi harei ha'ir lefonecha hi kones. The city is right here. Why don't you go in? Nichnas v'yashav v'beis ha-medrash v'darash kol hayom kulo. And he went into the city. He sat himself down. What else is Reb Tarfon going to do? Sat himself down in the city, and he learned the whole day. Amru lo misham raya. What, that's a proof? Rabbi Yehuda, in the story of the Brice, is bringing a proof to his opinion. That's the Maisa, a more elaborate version of the Maisa. The Mishnah just said, Maisa haya v'nichnas Rabbi Tarfon. Now we have a little bit of color on the story. And it's the same story. He goes in, Rabbi Yehuda brings a raya, that even though he didn't know, it's still okay. Zok de gemar misham raya. Shema belibo haisa. Maybe he did know. Maybe the reason why Reb Tarfon went into the city is he didn't have to wait for the Raya Bakr to tell him there's a city. He also knew that there was a city. So maybe Lechatchila, he also made this city his place of residence. Oh, Beis HaMedrash Muvla B'toch Tchumo Hoya. He's allowed to go into the city. You remember the city is within 2,000 Amas. According to the first opinion, you can go into the city and you have to stop at 2,000 Amas from where you started. So it could be 500 amas into the city, it could be 1,000 amas into the city, but that's where you have to stop. Maybe the Beis Medrash, where he spent all day learning, was within that section, so it's not a riot. So we have a cryptic story in the Mishnah. We have a little bit more elaborate story quoted in the Braisa in the Gemara. I just want to make 2 points. Notice that the stories here are very different, because the story in the Mishnah, the story in the Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda says, Maisa haya v'nichnas Rabbi Tarfon, the story in the Mishnah is below Mischaving. He says explicitly that Rabbi Tarfon did not know. When the Braisa quotes the story as a proof to Rabbi Yehuda, the first rejection is, well, maybe he did know. Maybe he knew in advance. And therefore, if he knew in advance, he proactively made it so that it should be his place of residence in advance. So therefore, you don't prove anything. But wait a minute, the story in the Mishnah said explicitly he didn't know. So now we have different versions of the story. In other words, the first rejection of the Gemara to Rabbi Yehuda's raya in the Gemara is contrary to the story the way it's told in the Mishnah. So we have now 2 different stories, and what happened? Was he mischaving? Was he not mischaving? There's a disconnect here in the stories. Even further than that, if you just look at the Braisa, it doesn't say a word about Shabbos. If you just look at the story in the Braisa, the more longer version, here's the story. Maisa v'Rabbi Tarfon Shoyim Halach B'Derech. It was a Tuesday night. V'chosh chalo. And it got dark. V'lon chutz le'ir. And Tuesday night he slept over because he couldn't go any further because it was dark. L'shachmas on Wednesday morning, mitza'u roe bakar. Amru lo rebi ha'irei ha'ir lefanecho ikones. You don't have to hang out here for the rest of the day. There, right over there, there's the city. Go in. So he goes in and he learns all day. And where do we see something like that? If you look at the top of page 4. At the top of page 4, we're already familiar with Reb Tarfon placing himself in compromised positions while he's traveling. Rabbi Tarfon is traveling, and it's not always so pushit for him to travel. He places himself in compromised positions. The famous Mishnah, in the beginning of Brachas, on Daf Yud Amid Beis, top of page 4. Beishana Yomrim Be'erev Kol Adam Yata V'Yikra B'Boker Yamo. Shenem B'Avishach B'Chol V'Kumecha. What is the posture that one should adopt when they're saying Kriya Shema? So Beishana says that Be'erev you should lie down and you say Kriya Shema, and in the morning you should stand up when you say Kriya Shema. Because the Torah says in the parsha of Kriya Shema, B'Shach B'Chol V'Kumecha, which means it's not just a time, but it's also a posture. So you should say Kriya Shema Shel Arvis B'Shach B'cha when you are mamish lying down, and you should say Kriya Shema Shel Shachris B'Kumachum when you're standing up. U'Beis Hillel Omrim, no, Beis Hillel says Kol Adam Kari Kedarko. There's no halacha of posture when it comes to the recitation of Kriya Shema. Amar Rav Tarfon, the Mishnah ends, Amar Rav Tarfon, Ani Yisi Bo Bederech, he was on the road, the Yisi Likros Kedivrei Beis Shammai, and it came the evening, and I wanted to follow Beis Shammai, which means that I had to prostrate myself, the Sikanti Ba'atzmi Mitnei Alistim, and I got myself into trouble. I was in danger. I was lying there, iskishbreit, and God knows what could have happened to me. I was in a sakana. So we see already that Rav Tarfon travels. We see Rav Tarfon has issues traveling. The story, the way it's presented in the Braisa, doesn't say a word about Shabbos. It says about Rav Tarfon was having a difficult time traveling, and he rested, and the next morning, they said to him, I'll make it much easier for you. Just go into the city. So simply what I'm pointing out, and I'm building a progression here, is just to try to understand what the story is, the different versions of the story in the Mishnah and the Gemara, and to try to understand the role of the story in the Psak Halacha. Rabbi Yehuda brings a raya that he is correct from a story. So the story here is playing a significant role. I want to give you perhaps the sharpest example of this in the next case, the bottom half of page 4. So, Baruch Hashem, we're coming up to Chanukah. So, Baruch Hashem, after Chanukah comes Purim. So, Lama Redna Bisselvegen Purim. The covered Chanukah, we'll talk a little bit about Purim. Famous halacha in Purim. Gemara Maseches Megillah Zayin Amid Beis, bottom half, page 4. Amar Rava. Mechayev Inish Lipsumei Bepuria. Everybody knows this Gemara in their sleep. Mechayev Inish Lipsumei Bepuria Adelo Yoda Bein Arur Haman Lebaruch Mordechai. That there's halacha to get, how do you translate the word Lipsumei? Anybody want to translate the word Lipsumei? Inebriated. Oh, it's such an elegant word. It's on the Shmeinin drunk, Chas v'Shalom, it's an inelegant word. It's a mitzvah to drink. It's a mitzvah to drink on Purim. And it's a mitzvah to drink until you don't know who the good guy is and you don't know who the bad guy is. Adonayada ben Aru Haman LeBaruch Mordechai. Clearly, Aru is Haman and Baruch is Mordechai. But you're so fayushkit and so famished from the inebriation that you can't tell the difference anymore. That's the halach. And it's a ha-chayiv, mechayiv inish. Oh, my Rava, mechayiv inish. This is as direct a halacha as we get. And you see the little bays. It's quoted la halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. Now comes the story. Rabbi Rav Zeira of Dusu, that's Purim Bahadei Adodi. Rabbi and Rav Zeira pravid Sudas Purim together. Ipsim, so they became libisumei, they became inebriated. Come Rabba, shachtei l'Rav Zeira. It's an amazing lashon in the Gemara. He shechted them. I'm particularly sensitive, my name is Shechter, so I'm a shtickle particular. It doesn't say Hamas Rav Zeira, it doesn't say Hika Rav Zeira. He shechted Rav Zeira. He took a knife, took the chalaf, sharpened it up, took his neck, he shechted Rav Zeira. Come Rabba, shachte le Rav Zeira. It's not a nice thing to do to Rav Zeira. He's in a fit of inebriation. Come Rabba, shachte le Rav Zeira. Lamachar, after he came out of his inebriated state, bo'e rachmei v'achye. So he asked for rachmanis, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was machaya mesim. So Rav Zeira Nebuch was shoyna fenoy lamo emes. And the rabbi who shechted him the next day asked for Rachmanis, and he was Machayahim. He's back, Baruch Hashem, everything is fine. Lashana the next year, Amar Lei, so Rabbi says to Rav Zeira, Nesi Mar Venevat Sudas Pur Bahadei Adodi. We had such a great time. We had such a great time last year. We should do this again. Let's have again Nacham al Sudas Pur. Amar Lei, Zot Rav Zeira, Zot Maran Shulding, Rabbi Taira. Not every year is a miracle going to happen. Ad kan de Gemara. Next line of the Gemara. Amar Rava, Sudas Purim Sha'achla Balayla, Lo Yatze Yedei Chavasa. Yeah, I can't eat it at night. Back again, a strict halacha, quoted little letter in the Shulchan Aruch, Sudas Purim Sha'achla Balayla, Lo Yatze Yedei Chavasa. Question. What's the story doing here? It's a story. When I went to yeshiva, when I learned with Dr. Pelkovitz in yeshiva, so B'nai Yeshiva have a, let's call it less than fully engaged attitude toward what we used to call agadata. So the Gemara is halacha, baichiga halacha, and then there are the stories. So either you skip the stories in yeshiva, or you daven up the stories in the yeshiva. Very nice, but that's not the real McCoy. I want to make a case that there's a lot in the story, like this story. What is this story doing here, and what is it meant to do? Why is this story here? What message is this story giving? You remember how the Gemara begins? Amar Rava, Chayav Inish Lepsumei Bepurya, Adalayada Ben Araham Lebaruch Mordechai. You have to get a little bit inebriated. I love that word. I keep on using inebriated. You have to get a shtickle happy. You have to get happy. And then comes, the Gemara tells a story. Somebody got really happy, shechted somebody else. Baruch Hashem and Ness happened. The next year he says, come on, let's do it again. And there says, wait a minute. I'm not going to have b'chol shaita misrachish nisa. Why is the story there? What is the story trying to tell me? And you notice it's not couched in any legalistic language. It doesn't say chayiv, doesn't say usher, doesn't say mutter, doesn't say potter, doesn't say chayiv. It just a story. And we get weiter. Next halacha is you can't have the sudas purim at night. Turns out there's a massive machlokes rishayim. Turn on page 5. So the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, in the Dape Arif, in the back of the Gemara, where he quotes this story, the Rif in the back of the Gemara quotes the halacha. Quotes the halacha, Chayav Inish L'Bsumei Bepur, you see it all the way at the top of page 5 and the riff in the middle. Chayav Inish L'Bsumei Bepur Yadol Lo Yoda Bein Baruch Mordechai L'Araham. Zok the Heliger Rabbeinu Nisim, it's the right column on the top half of the page, sort of spilling out through the whole page. So if you look in the top half of the page, about 3-4 lines from the bottom where Chayav Inish is underlined, B'chayev Vinish, so the Rabbeinu Nissim in his parish on the Rif picks up this halach on the Rif. B'chayev Vinish, L'Vzumei B'puri Adalo Yada, Bein Baruch, Mordechai L'Orahom. The Amrinam B'Gemari quotes the Gemara. Because of Rabbeinu Ephraim, Zal, we know a lot about Rabbeinu Ephraim, this Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim did not publish a sefer. We don't have like the Chedushei Rabbeinu Ephraim al Hashas. But Rabbeinu Ephraim is quoted in multiple Rishonim. Rabbeinu Ephraim lived in the 12th century, and he was a bar plukta with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Ephraim were all over each other. And we know a great deal about Rabbeinu Ephraim and his contentious relationship with Rabbeinu Tam, and Rabbeinu Tam's contentious relationship with him, from the way Rabbeinu Ephraim is quoted in many places. There was a rabbi in Brooklyn, Rabbi Yisrael Shapansky, Zechrono Livracha, who published a sefer called Rabbeinu Ephraim. He went and he gathered all the Rabbeinu Ephraims and all the Rishonim, and he put them together into one sefer. And you get a sense, because of the chesed that Rabbi Shapansky did for us, you get a sense of the fullness of who this Rabbeinu Ephraim was. You know, every once in a while you bump into a Rabbeinu Ephraim, but you need to know you're dealing here with a powerful powerhouse of personality. The curse of Rabbeinu Ephraim. Mehahu uvdo. Dekom rabba v'shachti l'rabzera kedi isa b'gemara. Idchi lei memra derava v'lo shaper dami l'mevad hachi. Zokta Rabbeinu Ephraim, the story is a subversive story. It subverts the halacha. The halacha is Amar Rava chai v'nish l'psumei b'purya. Kum tzegein the gemara said, no. No, you better not. Look what happened. Nebuch, look what happened to Reb Zerah. The whole purpose of the story is to say, no, I disagree. And the Maskonas HaGemara is the story. So what happened here is that we have a machlokes in the Gemara, but it's not your standard machlokes. Beishamai Amrim this, and Beishilal Amrim this. Rava says, Mechayiv Inish L'Psula, Amar Reb Zerah, Chas V'Shalom, let me tell you what happened to me. That's not the way it's framed in the Gemara. It's not framed as a disagreement, the kind that we're normally accustomed to. It's framed as halacha, story. Zok the Hilga Rabbeinu Ephraim, that the story is to teach us keneged the halacha. And that's the maskana. The maskana is because mehahu uvda dekom rabba v'shachti l'rab zera idchile, it's pushed away. It's rejected. The member of Rava v'lo shaper dami l'mevadah. The Hilig of Balamor and the tiny, if you think Duran is tiny, the Balamor is super tiny, and I actually blew it up a little bit. So in the Amor HaKotan, he quotes the same Rabbeinu Ephraim, and he quotes the same halacha, that Rabbeinu Ephraim says that the story rejects the halacha. So what I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to inhere tremendous chashivas in the story. It's not like in the previous example in the Mishnah, it's a matter of understanding the story. How do we understand the story? The story in the Mishnah is different than the story in the Braisa. How do you know it's about Shabbos? But here, the story, straight out, is playing a halachic role. The halacha says like this. The story says, keneged that, in opposition to that. In fact, the Rabbeinu Ephraim is quoted in the Beis Yosef. This is quoted in the now significant authoritative sources of our halachic tradition. If you look towards the bottom, the Ran quotes the Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim says that this story rejects the halacha of Rav. Now I want to show you two things, and then I'm going to start to wrap up. Just introduce one more cluster briefly, but I want to spend time on this. In the Sefer HaEshkol, it's a controversial work. Sefer HaEshkol, medieval Provence, southern France, has an interesting take on this. If you look at the Sefer HaEshkol at the bottom of page 5, he quotes Rabbeinu Ephraim. And he says, "V'arav Reb Ephraim Kasav," underline third line, "Midemaisi ala uvda, kam rabba v'shachti l'Reb Zera, al yedei de'ipsim." Since after the Gemara said that you should get inebriated, the Gemara quotes this story that Rabba got a little bit carried away and he shechted Reb Zera. U'lashana haba'a, he said to him, "Nevad purim bahadi bahadodi." Maybe we should do this again. And Rab Zera said to him, not every year does a miracle happen. Zok Rabbeinu Ephraim, memele idchi memra de rabba, v'lav shaper dami l'mevarachi. But v'li hakosev nira, the opposite. Sefer HaEshkol says that from this Gemara is taka in keeping with the halacha. Because if in fact the story was meant to show that we should not get drunk on Purim, so why did Rabba come to Rav Zera the next year and say, let's do this again? The fact that Rabbi said we're going to do it again is a raya that we have to do it again. He wants to bring a raya not from the response of Rav Zera to Rabbi, but from Rabbi's invitation to Rav Zera. Why didn't Rabbi learn his lesson last year and say, you know what, this isn't a good idea? Why did we need Rav Zera to say to him, you know, I'm nervous, lav v'kol shaita esrachish nisa? The fact that Rav Zera said, v'liya kaisiv nira demikan raya de tzorch lipsume, the ilav, the invitation should not have included drinking. Why did it include drinking? Says the Sefer HaEshkol that the Gemara brings you a raya that's the halacha. So Rav Zera Taka, I would say probably wisely declined the invitation, but the fact that it was proffered itself is a raya supportive of what the halacha is. And the last example I want to give you is from the Hilig Yad Ephraim on page 6. One of the Perushim on the Shulchan Aruch is Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margulius. Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margulius was one of the greatest Gedolim in the 19th century. He has a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called the Yad Ephraim. And he tells us as follows. He says that the story absolutely supports the halacha. How do we understand that the story supports the halacha? You remember Rabbeinu Ephraim said that the story undermines the halacha. How does he know that the story supports the halacha? He says, what's pshat? Chayev inish l'psumei b'puria. What's the lashon? Chayev inish l'psumei b'puria ad de lo yada ben baruch Mordechai, thank you, la'or hama. What does ad mean? So there is a famous rabbinic phrase, ad ve'ad bechlal, or ad ve'lo ad bechlal. Does it mean that you have to mamish drink until you mamish don't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai? Or does it mean you drink until you may, in the next drink, not know the difference? It's ad ve'lo ad bechlal. Zok the Heliger Rebbe Ephraim Zalman Margulius in the Yad Ephraim, that the halacha when it says, "Oh my Rav, Chaya Vinish Lipsumi," is don't get so drunk. Don't get very drunk on Purim. Because if you don't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai, you're in big trouble. You can only drink until you may not know the difference. And I'll bring you a raya. How do I know that that's the case? Because Rabbi and Rab Zeira drank too much. Rabbi drank too much. And then come Rabbi, Meshachti l'Rab Zeira. This is what happens when you violate the halacha of Chai Vinish L'Bsume Bepuria Ad Delo Yada. This is what happens when you drink too much. When you drink too much, it's dangerous. So I'm proving to you that the basic halacha is correct by showing you the danger of the excess. Because the halacha was not in excess. The halacha was in moderation. You see what happens when you violate the moderation? Something terrible is about to happen. Why am I showing you all of this? First of all, it's just really interesting in terms of the levels of understanding how much you have to drink on Purim. But I have a bigger, I think, a more overarching purpose, and that is to demonstrate and to sensitize the role of stories in the Gemara. So when the Gemara tells a halacha, that's the kind of language that we're familiar with. We're familiar with halachic language. Mechayev inish lebesume. This is how you do it. It's presented very apodictically, very catechetically, very directly. This is it. This is what you do, you don't do. We're not used to, and I'm suggesting we should become more used to, the role of stories as purveyors of halachic decision-making. That in this story, it's just a story. It's a little bit strange story. Shechted him. And I can't get over that. Come Rabba. He shechted Rab Zeira. It's like, I can't get past that. But in this story, lick the halacha. According to the Heliger Rabbeinu Ephraim, it's a machlekes in the Gemara. So you have Rava, and you have the story. The story is keneged. However, according to the second interpretation of the Eshkol, and according to the Yad Ephraim, the story is not keneged the halacha. The story is, in fact, supportive of the halacha. The last example that I wanted to give you that I don't have time is the end of Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara talks about all different kinds of ways that we have to ask mechila for one another. And then the Gemara on Pei Zayin Amid Aleph, page 8, Pei Zayin Amid Beige, page 9, English translation, page 10, tells four stories. So either at some point now or Chodesh Elul, when you're getting geared up to asking mechila from someone else, even though it's a mitzvah that we should do all the time, take a look at those stories. The point is that there is a tremendous amount of wisdom in this, what I think normally we tend to overlook. We overlook the stories. And I think it's important for us to focus on them, whether they're in the Chumash, whether they're in the Mishnah, or whether they're in the Gemara. I wish all of you a wonderful day.